everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind, a program meant to bring you ideas, concepts, and guests. Information to help you lead a more positively minded life. Because the mind is a wonderful thing, but very confusing. Very confusing, my friends, because how do you know? You know, I mean, there are so many people who are confused about their own minds. Let's take a look today at the subject of intuition. Yes. Intuition. When do you trust your intuition? When do you not trust your intuition? How many times have you, my friend, thought you were sure, you were positive something was going to happen to your daughter who was going on a trip? How many times have you thought that? You know, you think about that and you say, and you worry and you worry and you worry. And then you find out there's nothing to validate that. Well, why is it after you've had fears over and over again about the same thing, why isn't it that eventually your mind would say, oh, you don't have to worry because you always worry so much? You know, your mind, why wouldn't your mind say to you, well, you don't have to worry because you worried the last time and it didn't come out. So if you've worried 100 times and nothing happened that was bad, you must have learned from it. Because, you see, intuition is based on learning frequently. If you've done 100, let's take, for example, driving a car, okay? You learn to drive a car, you get the skills. After you drive for a good period of time, you get more and more relaxed as you're driving a car. You can now trust your intuition while you're driving. You can drive, you have your foot working, your hands are working, you're listening to the radio, you're looking out a distance, and you could trust that if something were to happen that you might not be able to deal with, that you would be able to respond. Okay. So you know your intuition tells you, lets you drive in peace so your mind can wander. Your mind can wander to think about different things because you know if something happens, like if a rock fell from a mountain while you were driving, you would know what to do, how to respond. You know, you'd hit the brake, you'd steer around it, you'd watch in back of you to make sure nobody's going to crash into you. You'd do all these things because you can trust your intuition because you've had the experience of driving for a long period of time. Yet, we will intuit dangers over and over again that don't exist, but we don't learn from having intuited something that didn't happen. So we have to look at this. It's very confusing. It's very confusing. What about instinct? Can you trust your instinct? You know, your instinct says there's thunder. It makes you jump because your instinct tells you, oh, lightning may strike you any minute now. Once you hear thunder, it anticipates lightning. And the primitive mind says, oh, lightning could hit me any minute now. So you jump and you run. Your cat does it, doesn't it? Your cat hears thunder, boom, it's gone. It's under the bed. Right? But you learned after a period of time, oh no, thunder doesn't do that. So my friends, then why don't our fears stop when they are irrational? If we over and over again have fears that do not turn into anything negative, why don't they stop? We have to look at the bilateral brain. We have to examine this wonderful 2 layers of the human brain. And I'm going to be taking your calls a little later, too, to hear about your own experience with this. There is much beyond doubt that we often fear the wrong things. Like with images of 9/11 indelibly in our mind, we fear, many people fear flying. Yet they don't fear driving, but they fear flying because of the images of 9/11, right? Yet the very same thing that if people who smoke, many people who smoke will have the same fear of flying, but they will not have the fear of smoking. You know, yet both are equal to potential death. Why is it? Why is it? What happens, you know, on average, the average smoker's life is shortened by about 5 years. That's the average. But the average life of a person flying on an airplane is shortened by about 2 minutes, you know, compared to the number of accidents that actually happen or things that actually happen. So why is it we don't fear smoking? Why is it that the people who smoke don't intuit, this is no good for me, even though they could feel it, you know? What is it? So we have to look. What is it that goes in and on in our brain? How do we have a brain that works one way, passionately, emotionally, and another way, which is this logical mind that tells us what to do? And do we want to do away completely with intuition because it's so illogical? No, you need it. You need it. Otherwise, you just do the same repeated life over and over and over again. Intuition is a dangerous thing. It could be a dangerous thing. There's a story about a young man, a woman was walking across the, a guy named Christopher Bono, a 16-year-old boy in Grand Marais, Minnesota. His car had broken down, a woman sees him, and she looks at this 16-year-old boy, and she says, well, what's the matter? You know, I'm a mother, and I see that you don't feel good. What's the matter with you? And the boy says, she says, where's your mother? And he says, I don't know where my mother is. And something tells her that something's wrong. So she gets the boy's license plate number, calls the police. The police track the boy down. They go to the house, and they find out he's just killed his mother. She's laying dead in there. So her intuition kind of really caught that he was lost out to lunch. You know, his brain had kind of fried and was gone. And meanwhile, there's another pilot. There was a story about a Russian pilot who is flying, and the air traffic controller's things went out of whack. And he's flying along, and he's told that there's another airplane in the vicinity. And his intuition, because he's an experienced pilot, tells him to drop 100 feet, and he drops directly into the path of the other oncoming flight. 70 people killed. Intuition. Can you trust it? When can you trust it? When can't you trust it? Your intuition tells you buy a house. Your intuition tells you pick a mate. Is that your instinct or is that your intuition? Is there a difference between instinct and intuition? Well, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to figure this out today. We're going to get this worked out because everybody has been talking recently about trusting your heart and trusting the wonders of your emotions and that you should be more in touch with your emotions and you should feel more emotionally and that you should listen to your emotions and listen to your heart. It's a good thing. But what is intuition? There's a guy, Nobel Prize lecturer, psychologist, Daniel Kahneman. He put out this theory that there are two tracks to the human mind. One is our behind-the-scenes intuitive mind, which is fast, effortless, associative, implicit, and emotionally charged. That's one level of your brain. Highly emotional, and it moves very fast, it's automatic, and by the way, it avoids introspection. It's not, if you have introspection, that will tell you differently. Your mind, this part of your mind, avoids it. So say you meet a man and you say, oh, that man looks great. I'm going to go over. And that meanwhile, that man has a knife in his belt. You ignore the knife. See, you ignore the part of you that says, oh, you know, there's something about having a knife in your belt. Because your intuition tells you he's the right guy. There's my soulmate. Right? Standing there. And I'm not making fun of it because, you know, your intuition, if based on real knowledge, I mean, you've heard my intuition when I work with clients, when I work with people on the phone, my intuition can be very useful to people. So one part of our brain is emotionally charged, that's one. And then track two is the other part of our brain, the familiar, the conscious, the explicit mind. It's deliberate, it's sequential. And it's rational. Your thinking mind requires effort to employ. So you have two parts of your mind. One part of your mind is instinctual, takes no effort. And the other part of your mind is logical, but takes a little effort to employ. And these two things seem to be running at the same time to one degree or another with most people. So you know people, there are many people who are more emotional and less logical, more logical and less emotional. Intuition seems to come from a combination of these two. Right? The intuition that works for you is a combination of these two. Just look at chess players for a moment. I'm a chess player. I've been a chess player since I was a little kid. I don't play chess much nowadays, but I used to play chess. And I used to play so much chess. I would play every day and night, and I would play in my room, and I would study, look at the books and look at famous games. And I would think about it. You know, I would actually think about it when I walked around. I'd say, hey, you know, what if you move pawn to king 4 instead of pawn to king 3 in that move? And it would just, I would play it out in my mind. Well, one of the things that happened with having so much experience playing chess is I developed the chess player's intuition, which is the ability to move fast. Do you ever go past the park, especially Washington Square Park, and you see these men playing chess, and these men are playing chess at a speed that's like this, at lightning speed, they're playing very fast. And sometimes you see people that look like they're hustlers for a living. They look like they should be a pimp. He should be doing something else. And he's there, and he's hustling for money, and he's winning. But the last person you would think would be a chess player. He's one of these guys who you'd expect to be doing three-card Monty. How does he win at chess? How does he do it? How does he beat even people who have been playing for a long period of time? Well, you've got a sharpened intuition, which is working, plus you have a lot of experience of a lot of games. I've played so many games of chess in my life that if I look at a board in any given position at any time, two people playing a game, I can spot it and say, you know, I've seen this before. And I could tell the outcome from memory. And I could tell what would probably be the best move based on what I've seen, based on the memory of where I've seen this position before. Whereas if you're a new player and you see a certain position, you say to yourself, well, I have to figure it out. But, you know, if you've seen enough of something, you can trust your instinct. If you've driven your car enough, you can trust your intuition. Your intuition. So what we're talking about today is when you can trust your intuition, when you can trust your intuition, when has it led you right, when has it led you wrong. Now, there is a thing called intuitive prejudice. You know, intuitive prejudice, which is when you have an intuition which is based on a prejudice. And you see things like it. You see responses. Remember the Mel Gibson drunken anti-Semitic thing that he went through? You know, or that Michael Richards vile interracial response or racial response. Or the two police officers in the two incidents where they shot somebody who was black like 4,000 times. Those are based on a prejudice that sits there behind you, behind your mind, and then gets acted out suddenly, and it looks like you're having an intuitive response. You know, I just don't trust those guys. Oh, yes, I better kill that guy because he may kill me. So there is such a thing called intuitive prejudice that we may or may not have, and that means something that prevents us from evaluating a situation based on some history which may or may not have been in our own experience. We have just heard from our parents, you know, that all people who look like, you know, who look a certain way should not be trusted or something like that. But what about our fears? Why do we have so many intuitive fears? And as I started the program saying, when you have intuitive fears, when you have fears that you're afraid something is going on, why don't you eventually get over the fact that that's not going on? If a person is afraid of their house catching on fire and they keep checking their house for going on fire, well, after a while, don't they learn that the house is not going to catch on fire? Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about intuition. Right. Intuitive fears. What are the intuitive fears? And many of them are based on instinct. Okay. What are the kind of fears? We have identified four factors that feed our risk intuition. We fear what our ancestral history has prepared us to fear. Right. With our old brain living in a new world, we're disposed to fear confinement, heights, snakes and spiders, and humans outside our tribe. So you have an instinct inside of you automatically that gets you aware of confinement, heights, snakes, spiders, and different kinds of people. This is what nature gave you. Nature said, watch out whenever these people come across your path. But again, you know, you have the experience of loving people and knowing that these people are not dangerous and knowing that, you know, snakes are not going to hurt you and spiders are not going to be in your neighborhood and that not all spiders are killers. And, you know, you have the experience with it. Eventually you could have spiders. You could let spiders crawl on your face and you don't have to respond. Well, I don't know about that. Every time I see that, I wonder how they do it. There's something about that feeling that just is icky, you know? But that's it. I mean, that's it. You know, imagine a spider crawling on your face. I mean, how do you get away from, ooh, what a terrible feeling. I mean, you must relax and say, oh, that's wonderful. Look, I can see the underbelly of the spider. You know, it's very, very hard. Nature. Instinct. What else do we fear? We fear what we cannot control. Behind the wheel of a car, we don't have as much fear, but in an airplane, in seat 17B, we don't feel that control. So we might have a fear of flying, whereas we don't have a fear of driving, and the danger of driving is 100 times more risky than the danger of flying. We fear what is immediate. Now, smokers' lethality and the threat of rising seas and extreme weather, right, this whole thing about global warming, it's in the distant future. So we're not so afraid of that. We don't feel the fear. We don't feel the fear. We think the fear of it. But the airplane takeoff is right now, so we'll fear what's immediate. You know, we won't fear the cigarette smoking as much because the danger's in the future. 17 years old, I remember I was talking to a 17-year-old who started smoking, and I remember I used to smoke, I don't. And I said, if only he knew what I knew, what I know now about smoking. And I was going to try to convey it, but I realized everybody tries to convey it. So he was looking at me, and he had a cigarette in his hand. He says, I'll bet you think I shouldn't smoke. I said, I wish you wouldn't smoke for your sake because I know the damage it does. And he said, look, I'm 17. He says, I got a great body. He said, my body's going to handle it. Soon as I see the first sign of breaking down, I'm going to quit. He says, but I could afford to do drugs. I could afford to do alcohol. He said, because 17-year-old bodies are built that way. They can handle anything. And you know something? He's right. 90% right, 95% right, that his body is a perfect machine for shedding toxins better than, you know, as you get older when the machine doesn't work as well. So he's not absolutely right, but I understand his point. What are the fourth fear? We fear threats readily available in memory. If a surface-to-air missile brings down a single American airliner, the result will be traumatic for the entire airline industry. I met someone just the other day who told me that she had observed the TWA flight airliner thing in Long Island, the explosion in Long Island. She said she saw it happen and since then could not fly. She couldn't go near an airplane. And that's why, if you remember, and I don't know how this happened so quickly, when after 9/11, the stocks of the airplane companies all sank through the floor. The airliners sank through the floor because people would not fly. They wouldn't fly because of 9/11. They associated that with the danger of flying. Given the difficulty to grasping the infinitesimal odds, there are 11 million annual airline flights. So the odds that will happen is beyond any kind of rational mind. But it doesn't matter because the mind fears threats that are readily available in memory. For these reasons, we fear too little those things that claim lives undramatically and too much the things that kill in spectacular bunches. So if we see a spectacular bunch kill, we associate it with ourselves. if we see something that's long-term, we don't associate it with ourselves. Now, here's the point of this, my friends. Intuition and fear are very closely related, and in some way we've got to figure that out, because in a very strange way, the world that we're about to enter is going to be a war of the minds. This world of you know, we no longer have these military wars because the wars are really, the costs are too big. But if we could scare each other enough, this is the idea of the world, we're going to scare people into being immobile. You were frightened by what we told you, by what our government, and I always call it we because I always believe I'm a part of it. We threw flags up and said yellow, green, red, blue, and we scared you. We had you putting duct tape on your windows, and you were feeling light. And some of you were saying, yes, I've got to go protect myself because this danger is here. We were trying to scare you. The terrorists that did attack, the people who did attack 9/11, whoever was behind it, if it wasn't some kind of a stupid plan, you know, I have an idea. Let's go knock down two buildings and see. We'll show them who they are. It might have been a small group, or it could have been a huge group, like Al-Qaeda, who says, you know, we're going to scare the humans, we're going to scare the Americans, and they scared us. They scared the living hell out of all of us. They really did. And then we continued the fear. And then we capitalized on the fear, and we capitalized on your fear, and we created, made you so numb by telling you that in Iraq there are these weapons that can turn around and kill your children. Right, so we scared you enough, and by through fear, you became inactive as we marched into Iraq and declared this unholy war. But it was through fear, because they worked on your fear levels, and your fear levels, my friend, are very much associated to intuition, because in intuition, you're getting a feeling beyond the logic that there's a danger. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. We're trying to figure out when you trust it and when you don't trust it. And here's one of the things I learned for sure. You do trust it if you could put it aside and come back to it later. There's a big trust for you. You have an intuition. Shall I have the blue one or the green one? I gotta have the blue one right now. You know, like children who are very impulsive, I gotta have that toy. A good mother, what does a good mother do? Rather than flooding the children with toys, okay. Well, next week we'll come back and look at that toy again. You know, and if that's the toy you want to get, next week we'll get it. Invariably, it's a good decision because, you know, the child's instinct tells them, their impulse is not to be as strong to buy that toy in particular. So one of the things you want to be able to do with every impulsive, intuitive decision is to see if it stands the test of time, meaning can you stand away from it? So, for example, if it's romance, if it's intuitive romance, and you feel like you have to act on this impulse and you've got to be with this person and you must, and even though it's going to cost you greatly and you have to violate some things, some vows you've taken or promises you've made to yourself, or if you've said to yourself, I'm not going to have any relationships for a while, but then here comes this hunk of a woman. No, I don't know. And you say to yourself, I got to have this person. I got to have them. Good. You want to test out your intuition? This person is my soulmate. This is my connection. You want to test it out? Don't do anything for a week. Don't even call them. Don't even speak to them. And see if it suffers. See if it survives time. So that's one of the big tests for intuition. Intuition is terrific. It may be. The part of what salesmen do is salesmen play on your intuition. They learn how to manipulate it, but they do this one major thing. They manipulate you with the urgency of time. And for a long while, they would sell you something and tell you, you got to grab it now. If you don't grab it now, you're never going to get it. And then this thing happened with the real estate market in New York. And the real estate market in New York became such that you weren't allowed to have any time to think of anything. And it was true. And then finally, the salesman's words were true. You got to grab it. You got to grab it. You got to grab it because you had to move so quick because there were so many people looking for apartments and so few apartments available that if you didn't grab it on the spot, it was gone by tomorrow. That was one of the few exceptions that I have ever seen to the rule, pause. Put it on pause for a little while. Okay, I'll think about it. Let me think about it. Yes, let me think about that thought. Think about saying that to everybody who comes to you with an idea. You know, okay, let me consider this. I'll be back. You know, you can tell salesmen who are really graceful. They look at you, and if you say, you know, all right, I'll think about it, and they come back, they believe they've lost the sale on one level, but they know they can't say to you, no, you can't come back. They know they have to say to you, you think about it, and they just hope that you will come back. But it's a very difficult thing for them because they really want you to act on the spot. You must get this. I have somebody else who wants to buy it. You know that? I can't tell you. I remember a time in my life when I was looking for a house, and I can't tell you about the number of times I saw these, you better grab this now because the guy down the block has got 15 bidders looking to buy it, and that house stayed on the market forever. I remember one house. It was really great. It was somewhere out on Long Island, and I was giving it a consideration, and the only trouble with this house was they were saying, you gotta buy it, you gotta buy it, you gotta buy it, you gotta buy it. It was a rush, it was cheap, it was everything. The only thing wrong with it, they said, well, you know those train tracks right in the back there? They're very, don't worry about them, because the train only comes through four times a day, and you barely notice it. So I called the Long Island Railroad, and one of our radio listeners recognized my voice, said, Armand DeMille, how are you? And I said, is it true the train goes? He said, no, it's 14 times a day it goes through there, and it blasts its horn right at that spot. Right? Right at that spot. So I said, oh, my gosh almighty. Well, that house still isn't sold. But some impulse buyer, somebody who is going to be, because I was close, I thought it was wonderful. Some impulse buyer is one day going to grab that thing. Just one more cute little story. I remember once there was a house on Fire Island that I thought I would be interested in buying in 1986, and it was fabulous. It was right off the beach. It was beautiful. It was a stone house. I wanted to buy it. It was inexpensive. The person says to me, I'd love to sell it to you, but I need to wait 1 week. Because I'm not sure. She didn't trust her intuition. She wanted to wait 1 week. She was a psychologist. Her husband had died. He and she had owned the house together. She didn't want to leave the memory, but she needed the money. That week, a hurricane hit. It came on the island. I think it was Gloria. It wiped out the house, took the house into the ocean. And there she was, kind of, you know, afterwards, happy that she got the full insurance for it. And there I was, happy that I didn't buy something that was now underwater. But thanks for that 1 week waiting. Can you afford to wait? Can you afford to wait in between? Well, we're going to take your calls in a little bit about your own intuition. But I want to read you something first. I want to read you about a path with a heart. Now, this is something that I think is different. Anything is one of a million paths. Therefore, you must always keep in mind that a path is only a path. If you feel you should not follow it, you must not stay with it under any conditions. If you have to have such clarity, though, you must have a disciplined life. Only then will you know that any path is only a path, and there is not a front to oneself or others in dropping it, if that's what your heart tells you to do. But the decision to stay on the path must be done free of fear or ambition. Now, that's the beginning part of this, and I want you to hear that. To lead a disciplined life says that in order to follow your intuition successfully, you've got to be willing to let it test time. We're going to take a short break, and when I come back, my friends, a little music, and then I'm going to continue with this discussion about intuition, and we'll take your calls as well. I'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. you who are bopping to this. I know I could leave this on and you'd just love it. It's I Don't Know by Korsakov and Austin. Korsakov, K-O-R. You know, if you ever wanted to find out what we are playing here, you go to my website, thepositivemind.com, or the website, thepositivemind.com, and you go to archives, and under the archives of today's program, which will be up by tomorrow, you'll find the very music we played. And in fact, you even find a link to where you could buy it. So we now provide you with all of the music that we hear on this wonderful program. That's I Don't Know by Korsakow and Louis Austin, A-U-S-T-E-N. And what I like about the music is the theme, I Don't Know, because, you know, that's the whole basis of what I Don't Know is about, is your intuition. Your gut says one thing and your mind says another. What do you know? What don't you know? Is he a good guy? Is he not a good guy? Is he the right guy? Is he the wrong guy? I mean, you know, you go to a doctor. You go to a doctor and the doctor tells you, well, what you've got to do is this, 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 and this. And your intuition says, I don't know. I should be taking 9,000 pills. You know, and you say, all right, I'm going to take this pill for my depression. But now I don't have any, sexuality. Oh, now I'll take this pill for my sexuality. Okay, now I have the sexuality and I don't have my depression, but I'm very nervous. Okay, take this pill to calm down. Okay, now I'll calm down, but I'm too sleepy to function during the day. Well, here's a little pill for energy. Okay, well, here's a little pill for energy. I'll take that pill for energy, but I can't sleep at night. Well, then here's a little sleeping pill. You know? And then so this goes on. Now, it happens, and I mean, maybe it is necessary sometime. But something inside you says this must be wrong. Not just what you heard, not just what people told you. Something inside you says, you know, it can't possibly be right. I remember I was looking at a foodstuff the other day, and I looked at it, and I just said, this, it doesn't look right. You know, I didn't know what it was about the food that didn't look right. Just, it doesn't look right. Something inside me was associating it. Now, you know, there are certain colors that your mind will automatically tell you not to eat. Do you know you can't eat blue food? You know that? Try to do something blue with kids. You know, kids very often fool around with food coloring. Blue, the body and the mind rejects blue. It says, uh-uh. Green as well. You know, it doesn't like green, but green, of course, vegetables are all green and so on and so forth. But green where it doesn't belong, green meat, kind of move away from it. But blue is one of those things that we're born with to protect us. Don't eat blue. I can't figure out why. Why not blue? 212-209-2900. Love based on intuition. I was looking at, I know what I was looking at the other day. Deborah Hillman came to mind. And I looked at Deborah Hillman. I looked at Deborah Hillman, who's one of the most intuitive artists I ever met. And I looked her up on the internet. Deborah Hillman used to be my co-host here in the radio with me, now living in Vermont. And Deborah has a website. And Deborah Hillman, yes, you can look up Deborah Hillman and there'll be, you can see her paintings. And her paintings, that was, yes, she did paintings, and there's one here somewhere around my office. And there's a painting by Deborah. And Deborah did these paintings and she did them all intuitively, yet she was a very logical person. And I'm back with you. Here we go. Hey, so we're taking your calls, 212-209-2900. That's the call. We're talking about intuition today. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
It's Bob calling from Long Island.
Hello, Bob.
How you doing? Long time since I spoke to you.
It's been a while.
Good show. The topic being intuition.
Yes.
I'll cut to the chase. I find, for me, the hardest place to use my intuition is in therapy. Whether to stay, whether to go, where the therapy itself is leading up to something that the therapist isn't professionally allowed to reveal. Since therapists traditionally aren't allowed to give, you know, aren't supposed to give a lot of feedback, you know, from like the Rogerian model or something.
Yeah, I hear.
You know, it always keeps me as the patient on kind of walking on eggshells as to whether my intuition is telling me that this isn't really working for me. I'm doing my part. So I'm kind of being led on, and I usually stay with therapists too long after my intuition finally says, wait a minute here, you know, my intuition has been right from the
beginning. I know, Bob. Bob, let me ask you something about your history, your background, you know. How have you, would you say that you've gotten much better over the years, or that you, that 10 years ago you were much more of a wreck than you are now?
No, much worse over the years.
Much worse over the years.
Yeah. Wow.
And you've discussed this with your therapist, that you seem to be getting worse and worse, and you've told them about your feelings, and you can't determine what, and they haven't approached the question, they haven't, they, what do they say to you, trust me? Trust the process?
No, it's not, it doesn't even seem to be even that, it doesn't even seem to be that well directed. It's kind of like more questions.
There are certain people, Bob, and I will say this. There are certain people who are, and I know of this, I've had my experience with this, who cannot tell the difference between when they're getting better and when they're not getting better. Mm-hmm. They can't tell, but from an outside observer, you could look and you could see that they're getting better. I would say that's one out of about 50 people that I see. But some people do have this thing where they can't see it, because in a way, to acknowledge that they're getting better would be in a way to acknowledge a relationship or a gratitude with the therapist. So that I've seen. But other than that, your question is always a valid question, and somebody, if you ask it, must answer it, because there is no such thing as I won't answer your question if you're paying the bill.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Just in terms of whether I, you know, the therapy is, I'm pretty knowledgeable about therapy. And
right, obviously.
You know, I mean, I've been doing it for a while. I have a lot of insight. I blah, blah, blah.
But 10 years and you say you're not getting any better. That's,
no, I have a physical problem that, you know, kind of therapists can't really address, and dealing with pain issues and stuff like that.
So I guess there's a lot of stuff. You know, I remember one thing a physician once said that was kind of significant. He said it to a man who had a bed condition, and the man said, the man had emphysema, and he went to his physician, and he said, after all this work I've done, how come I'm not any better? And the physician said to him, what happened was you didn't get worse, and you were on the path of getting worse.
Right.
And he said, what I was able to do was able to retard the angle of your descent. So I understand your question, and I understand the professional other side of it. But I think if anybody gets angry at your questions, you know, it's very difficult for you to deal with them.
I'm not angry at the question. It's that therapists usually aren't that participatory in the relationship, because it's not like a normal, it's not like a out-of-office relationship where people, it's a give and take, and opinions can be given.
I understand.
And
I understand.
Therapists are professionally trained to not respond.
But they could, no, they could give you answers. I guess,
when do I know, how do you know until it's too late whether it's right or not? It's not a question of whether it's working. It's a question of, like, whether I can value and respect the little voice that's telling me, or is this anxiety that's telling me?
Yeah. And, you know, I would say it's easy enough, because I would say to anyone, after 6 months, if it's not working for you, then it's not working. But there are some people, Bob, there are some people who have such a tough road, that have so many other ailments working at the same time, that there are so many other factors, that there are times that doesn't apply. In most cases, I would say you got to trust this fact that you're not getting what you want because you don't feel better.
You believe a therapist should reveal his method? I've gone to a few consultations and I ask them, you know, what kind of method do you work with? Because I'm looking for something specific. And they'll say, why do you need to know that?
I think so in many cases, but in some cases I could see why somebody would not do it. Mm-hmm. I could see when somebody's trying to empower a therapist, you know, that they would not do it. But how they do it, it's a big question. You know, Bob, when I do a show on psychotherapy, which I would like to do, I hope you're there to be calling in and asking your questions.
Yeah, because I'm tired of going to consults where the therapist will only reveal that they're eclectic. And
yeah,
in my experience, eclectic means that they've had enough time to forget every useful piece of information they ever learned.
Bob, I understand your irritation and your anger. I want to take another caller.
Can I ask you something, Armand?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just a request for a possible guest you might consider.
Sure.
The woman's name is Tara, T-A-R-A.
Well, do me a favor. Send me that
email?
In an email.
Okay.
Email
yeah.
me that, okay?
I think it might be really, really beneficial.
You probably are a good judge of that. Thank you.
Thanks.
Right. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi. I had a question. It's related to today's topic.
Yes.
I've had the feeling for some time now, and I think it's an intuitive feeling that my present job isn't satisfying, and that I should probably pursue something else, something that I'd really like to do.
Have you had this feeling before in other jobs?
Yes.
Frequently?
Frequently?
Yeah.
Have
you had 9 jobs in your life so far?
I'm sure, yes.
And in the 9 jobs, somewhere along the line, do you say to yourself, you know, this isn't fulfilling me and maybe I should move on?
Yes, I've had that that experience. Yes.
Yeah, so now here's the question.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, would you be better off sitting through a discipline and saying to yourself, well, you know, I've done this before. Remember the rule, if you've done what you've always done, you're going to get what you always got.
Right.
I've been here before, and every job I've ever had, when it gets to a certain point, I quit it.
Okay.
I would give yourself a year. I would say, I'm not even going to consider it for a year. I'm going to stick with this job. I'm going to earn some money. I'm going to put it aside. I'm going to make peace with the fact that I don't, that whether I belong here or not, let me stick with this job for a year. A year from now, I will quit or I will continue and see what happens to your mind when you make that decision.
Even though I've had this desire to move on.
Yeah, make
for
it from this moment on.
From this moment on.
What's your name?
Michael.
Michael. So, Michael, you see, there's going to be something inside you, and this especially happens at the beginning of summers for people, where they get this kind of, I got to get out of here. You know, what kind of work do you do?
I'm in the airline industry.
Yeah.
Okay. The transportation field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, you could see it, and it's like, it's one of these things where you could stay in your job because it has a lot of benefits, right? You could travel, you get so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Give it 1 year. How old are you now?
I'm in my late 40s.
Yeah, okay. You got plenty of time.
You think so?
Yeah, you're in you're not even 50 yet. You've got half a lifetime to go.
If I'm lucky.
Yeah.
It's just that, I don't feel as though this job will allow me.
Yeah, so you see, your mind won't allow you. See, and this is what the important thing is. Now, I may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this would be best for you to quit. But if you're somebody who's had jobs, you know, who's had a serial jobs, who's had job after job after job, right, then that thing, you know, then it may pay to just stick with something long enough. How long have you been on this job?
It's been 8 years now.
8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a long time. One year, okay, Bob?
Give it 1 year.
1 year, Michael. Right.
Okay, I'll...
Stay with me, okay, and we'll talk.
I'll take your advice.
All right, thanks.
All right.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello, Armand. This is Isham from Staten Island.
Hello, Isham.
I have a very brief story, then a question. The last example of intuition that I had was a family relative visiting from Montreal to New York City. When they were leaving, something told me, go and check the fluids in the car. They're going to drive for 8 hours. And the cousin told me, no, I just changed the oil just before I come. I surprised myself by insisting and being pushy, and I said, just let me check the fluids. And fair enough, I found that there was almost no oil in the car.
And how did that happen?
I don't know, but she told me, she remembered then that on the way down, she had smoke coming out from the AC vents.
And so you caught a condition that was something inside you, something instinctually told you. It's kind of amazing. Did it make you feel, I mean, what did it do to you when you found out?
I mean, I said, thank God that they didn't get stuck. They're a mother and daughter. So, you know, and I didn't put too much thought until you mentioned I was listening to you, and it made sense. Now, the question that I have is, could we be programmed or brainwashed from our childhood upwards by the media to have certain intuitions, if that's a correct term, like, for example, prejudice against blacks in America.
Yes.
And other examples.
Yes, yes, we do have that conditioning. It's somehow so hard. You know, I know of conditions, and I got to tell you about, there are people I know who have such programming in their mind, and, you know, this is, again, prejudicial kind of intuition, and they have this thing in their mind, and they have, and so to counter it, what they do is they do the exact opposite. So where you're told to fear people of a certain kind, they go, you know, like fear people on motorcycles, and these people instead, what they go out is they marry people on motorcycles, because it's just completely the opposite. So uh-huh. One way or another, that prejudice can work in your mind. Do you find yourself having an aversion to people?
Sometimes.
Yeah, and you know it, you're aware of it.
I became aware of it. I'm an immigrant myself, so I became aware of it actually when I came here, and I was free from the effect of the media, whether it's back home or here. So I started using my brain, not for the first time, but much more deeply, with a longer thought process. So I realized that I was programmed to think in a specific way or towards a specific goal.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's wonderful that you have that kind of insight. That's a wonderful thing. That's a great, it's great that you can now, you see, now what you're doing, this is the two tracks are overlying. You have this instinctual track, which we know works, and then we have this other track of yours, which is logical, and you have the two of them working together, which I consider to be beautiful. I consider that's great. How lucky, how fortunate for you. It means that you won't go around hating people for no reason.
Yep.
It's a very wonderful thing. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Time for one more call, and then we'll be right back. Oh, no, we won't be back. Then I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. One more call. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? I'm on.
Hi there.
I was listening to what you were saying about intuition, and from my own personal experience, I tend to be a highly intuitive person, and I work on developing it. And I think that it varies with each individual. What I found in my own personal experience is that I don't really think that we respect our intuition as much as our intellect. And the only time I've got caught in a cross current is when my intuition was telling me something, but emotionally I was hoping for something else, and try to intellectualize myself out of it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So both, you know, which one do you trust? You can't trust yourself emotionally. You can't trust yourself intellectually. Your intuition sometimes gets skewed. After a while, like the chess player, you know, you get the experience where you begin to realize certain situations yield certain results, and you can trust what's going on inside you. So you've sharpened your skills.
But I think the gut thing is really, really very powerful.
And wrong for many people. There are many people I know, especially violent people, all follow their gut. You know what I mean?
But do you think that's, don't you think that's displaced anger and rage as
of course,
to intuition?
But it still feels like it's your intuition. It feels the same way. So you can't say all gut feelings are good.
No.
Because as I said, you know, I've seen enough people out there who do harm based on intuition.
Mm.
Not you. You're building a world with us. Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Armand Mill with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to have to be going. I will be back with you on I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends, with more exciting stuff. Send me an email, armand@brainlink.com, and do visit wbai.org.